you're tariffing our cars that go there at 20%, and the ones that come here at 5%.
Right.
And why? I don't know. Okay, then that's not right.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the North Point of View. I'm here with Dr. Walter Kimsies. Walter, how are you?
I wish I was doing better, Mark, but we're okay.
You're okay?
Yeah, we're okay.
We've got a...
You didn't ask me why. Thanks, man.
You got all serious. I was like, after the last one, I'm like, what the heck? We're going to go into this like childhood repressed memory thing where the tanks are rolling up the street of Rio. I'm like, crap, uh-oh, where are we going? Okay, Walter.
Yeah, you.
So I'll humor you. What's up, Walter?
What's up is April 2nd. Why
what's April 2nd?
Trump calls it Liberation Day is beyond me. Okay, but he's got a whole bunch of people, and they are trying to figure out with 186 trading partners with the U.S. what's the differential in the tariffs that we impose on goods that we import from their places,
right,
versus the tariffs that that they charge on us from goods that we export to them.
Right.
And so our good friend Jim Newsom likes to talk about Europe tariffing our cars that go there at 20% and the ones that come here at 5%.
Right.
And why? I don't know. Okay, then that's not right. Brazil, they tariff our methanol at 15%. And we tariff theirs at 3%. You know, they make theirs out of sugar cane, we make ours out of corn. And every so often, the corn crop or the sugar crop, the sugar cane crop isn't very good. So we swap this stuff. But why should Brazil not get tariffed the same rate that we do? And it's a question few dare to ask.
Right.
It's being asked.
Yeah, we had that conversation a week ago. By the way, this podcast is tariffs.
Yes. Part two.
Hit go, right? And so, yeah, I mean, that's the issue. Again, you get the headline, right? Mm-hmm. And we're 5 miles wide and 2 inches deep on this stuff, right?
Right.
It's like tariffs, wow, everybody's running out of the house like it's on fire. It's like, wait a minute, guys. There's a true up that needs to happen here.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just going to have the hard conversation, right?
Yeah, it's time.
Yeah.
You see, we gave all these countries advantageous terms of trade.
Yeah.
And under our stupid American belief that, you know, it's, you know, the pursuit of liberty and happiness, or pursuit of happiness and liberty, and that's what drives them, it's what drives us. But the rest of the world, you know, a lot of people, a lot of populations don't believe in themselves, but we did it. And so here we are, generous to Brazil with the terms of trade, and what do? Oh, let's sell land to China. Let's go. We like China. Oh, you do? Oh, you're going to join China and taking the dollar out as the world currency, which is a bad idea. Not because we're in the U.S. It's a bad idea because China doesn't have a currency you can trust to do your risk management in.
Right.
The U.S. Treasury curve is the deepest, the widest, the most liquid in the world. If you're Coca-Cola or the Kingdom of Sweden and you've got debt, you swap it into U.S. dollars and you swap it on the Treasury curve into fixed or floating payments. And you can do that on the Treasury, U.S. Treasury curve. You can't in China because who knows what she's going to do tomorrow.
Right.
You can't in Europe because it's not liquid enough. All the pension funds and all the bonds. What's your alternative? Here. And that function alone is something China can't replace. But the Brazilians are foolish enough to join in with the China and, oh yeah, we're gonna take the new world order. What new world order? Your population isn't growing. Your economy is maxed out. You didn't get much further and China is there destroying your industries. So what the Chinese did is they took the leather out of Brazil, then they started making crappy cheap shoes that looked like the nice Brazilian ones. You know, you might remember in the 80s and the 90s, you walk down Manhattan shoe stores with, you look at the shoe, made in Brazil. And now it's all made in China. And how long do they last? They're like fast fashion. You know, you wear them a few times and they fall apart. But what happened to the Brazilian shoe industry? It's gone. And, oh, but we're still gonna run after China. Why? And so well, if you can't figure out that you're hollowing out your own economy, yeah. then we might as well not be giving you any advantages because there's no point to it.
Yeah.
Okay, you know, it's sometimes...
Favored nation status comes and goes, right?
That's right. Privilege is a privilege. You earn... This is, you know, the sense of entitlement many of U.S. trading partners have is wrong. And
it's... The lunch tab is due, right?
Exactly. And you know what?
Lunch... For a long time at the cafe without paying a bill.
Right. You know, you want it, you want the same terms of trade, fine. But you're going to have to make us feel like we're the most loved and not some other place. Otherwise, you get treated like everybody else.
Right.
So it's
What's the end game here? How do you see this playing out? And again, a lot of people are trying to figure out what's next. There's big deals that are sort of on hold, small deals on hold. Everybody's trying to figure out the next 30, 60, 90 days, second half of the year. Mm-hmm. What's your forecast of what, let's say, this year looks like in pieces?
Well, regardless of what poorly informed advisor Trump has, the reality is China's trade peaked at 37% of our containerized imports. It's dropped to 30, 29%, going towards 20. And my forecast that I made years ago is it would kind of bottom out at 15 to 18%. It's not going to go to zero. Just can't. China's too
big. Too much infrastructure, yeah.
Exactly. Just not going to happen. So we're going in that direction. And simultaneously, we need to put the genie back in the box. You know, Deng Xiaoping at the time, the president of China, signed all of these agreements to join the WTO, promised a bunch of stuff, the vast majority of which China never delivered on. I mean, they manipulated their currency until the last year of George W. Bush being in office. I was still in Wall Street at the time. And, we got very close to listing China as a currency manipulator, which means something, and we don't have time on this tape to go through it, but you don't want to be called a currency manipulator. All kinds of privileges you have are gone. So you look at the dollar renminbi exchange rate, and it's a nice straight line. I've shown it to you before. And then in the last year Bush in office, you start seeing the renminbi begin to appreciate. That means this is how many renminbi per dollar. So the exchange rate goes from 8 to 7.5 to 7 to 6 something because China is exporting to the U.S., and then they would take their dollars and buy treasury bonds, which is why China, you know, at the time there's a lot of stupid commentary in the press and the national news and the, you know, the comedians. Oh, America owes China a bunch. No, America owes whoever owns the bond.
Right.
Okay. If it's China or Thailand, doesn't matter. So Japan was the most manipulator. Well, we let them do it because they were useful, but they were the biggest holder of U.S. bonds. Then it was China. And China continues to be the biggest owner of U.S. bonds, but they started to engage in what's called a currency peg. And I didn't mean to go off on such a big tangent, it's part of the story. You can't ignore that.
And
right?
Just so we have a context here, what percent would that be of ownership? Because I looked it up a year or so ago, but it's...
It was the largest owners, foreign owners of U.S. Treasury debt. It was substantial, I believe, and I haven't looked at the tick data in a few years, but I think it's like 30%.
Yeah, I was thinking it was.
But I had added
20,
up all the currency.
20 the last time I looked.
It could very well be. I remember when it overshot 12.
Yes.
And but it fluctuates. But I had added up all of the holdings by all the currency manipulators.
Got it.
And how do you tell as a currency manipulator? Look at the chart. Go to tradingeconomics.com, click on the foreign exchange rate. And
do a little research, y'all.
Yeah, you see the ones where the exchange rate fluctuates like this, manipulated. The ones that go like this, all right, they're not manipulated. I mean, you can tell, right?
That's read the chart.
Oh, man, I love the renminbi one because if you go back far enough, you can see it. It's kind of like, you know, flatlined. Guy died in the hospital, and then he comes back to life. Anyways, so that's part and parcel of the whole story here.
What
we're trying to do is to put the Communist Party genie back in the bottle.
Right.
Turned out to be not a good genie, it was a bad genie.
Yes.
Okay, so back in there and close the cork. So they've gone all over the place. We recently got Li Ka-shing's Hutchison, C.K. Hutchison, to sell a bunch of terminals.
Yeah.
The ones in Panama did not piss off Xi as much as all the other ones that he sold.
Interesting.
China was controlling up to 150 ports around the world, which means their ships could eventually go there, get refueled, and now China is going to make sure the seas are a safe and peaceful place to navigate. And, you know, like hell, right? Not gonna.
Is that deal going to go through, by the way?
Which, that one? Oh, yeah. But they have invited Li Ka-shing to visit in Beijing a lot. Mm-hmm. And remember what they did to the guy who started, what was his name, Alibaba, et cetera. So we'll see what happens. But basically, the deal's gone through. And there's two ways it'll go through. There's the legal way, and then there is a, well, we're taking it over anyways. Mm-hmm. It's going to go to MSC, currently the world's largest container carrier by shipping volume capacity. So what Trump doesn't talk about, and the Democrats and everybody else, is that if you go down the west coast of South America, you get to Lima. Lima's right next to Callao, which is a big port there. I helped put the first container terminal, privately owned container terminal ever in Peru's history. I got to do that. It's a privilege. I work with Dubai Ports World. But you go further south to Shanghai, and there China Shipping Costco has built a modern container terminal, mostly automated, and that effectively gives them huge influence and control over West Coast South America. The copper and other rare earth metals from Chile, fruits and vegetables and wine from Chile, fruits and vegetables from Peru. They got pretty good grapes too, by the way.
Yeah.
And then you've got Ecuador with their bananas and who knows what else Ecuador is doing these days, you know, dealing with a lot of crime. But that put them, they've got a lot of influence there. And then on the other side, in Argentina and Brazil, a lot of land ownership to grow soy. And so, you know, start the sweeping. You know, you start sweeping a room from one side to the other. You don't do here and there and here. So start in Panama. Okay, Colombia's good. Ecuador, oh, dear, what are we going to do with that? Peru, uh-oh. Why do they have that port there? And it's a great place for the Chinese Navy to call. But that has not popped up yet. So in the tariff thing that we were talking about, the ultimate end game is that America reasserts its primary position as a trading partner to most of the world and to displace China. And China is not a big consumption market. There are a lot of people there,
right?
But no. The middle class income in China is a fraction of the U.S. They're just more people with an almost middle class income. But it's not a good place to export to unless you're sending them raw materials and then you get manufactured goods back from them. Kind of the same crap that England did to the U.S. that pissed us off so much that we signed the Declaration of Independence.
Sort of like that.
That's right. We want to make this stuff here.
So the takeaway, we've got a couple minutes left.
We do?
In this one, time flies.
All right. I'm just nervously looking at the gong.
The gong's coming out, by the way. What's the takeaway for business? When does it start to, we got choppy waters right now.
Yeah.
When does it smooth out? Do we start to smooth out summer? I'm looking for some summer doldrums. I'm looking for the wind to die down. I'm looking for flat waters to get out and run the boat again. Yeah. What do you think?
So April 2nd plus minimum of 6 months, maybe out to 18. But Trump's going to have to move quickly because, 18 months from now, I think we are right starting the new elections, the midterms.
Midterms.
Yeah, and got to watch out. People get angry enough. Congress could turn very, very blue. That could be very disruptive. So I think it has to be within the next 12 months. And a couple of messages to companies. We don't have enough time for this, but I'm going to bring it up anyways. Many companies survived horrible things. Surviving a China-U.S. trade war, potentially a war over Taiwan, does not mean that it's the end of your company. If you look at Siemens, they've been around over 100 years. They were there before Adolf Hitler went to power and after he left, and they're still there. One of the world's largest industrial conglomerates. Bayer was there beforehand. Volkswagen was born during the Nazi regime, but they survived the end of the war. Porsche, BMW, Bayerische Motorwerkschaft, BMW, they were there before. American companies did a lot of business with Germany and German companies during World War II. Stuff people don't talk about. It's always, we always think about it at the political level, but at the economic level, things didn't go, don't have the same colors as at the political level.
And this is literally the rat through the python, right?
So if you want to get through this, if you want to get your company through this, talk to me. But you need to understand how these guys, how these rats got through the pipeline.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. And yeah, that's what I spend a lot of my time remembering, reading, researching, etc. But Mark, that's, and I'm going to give a talk next week in Ohio to the Council of Supply Chain Management Professionals, the CSCMP, and that's the focus of the talk. It's like you have to look at what companies did to go into Russia, out of Russia. You know, Coca-Cola was in Russia. My dad's boss once wrote a book called Vodka Cola, which, by the way, is a terrible drink. I actually mixed it once. Oh, my gosh, that's disgusting.
Vodka Cola. That's it. We're going to wrap on that one. That's the end of the podcast.
I know, now there are people spitting. Like, terrible idea.
We'll continue. All I did was say tariff and hit go, and... Anyway,
there's more to talk about.
Brilliant. Thanks, Walter.
Thanks, buddy.
Enjoyed it. Thanks, guys.